All right, we are live on another edition of the Edlo Podcast. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. I always say it three times, hoping that someone new will subscribe. And here we are, everybody who's been listening and following this for 130 whatever episodes knows I'm a big time pro wrestling guy. Done it. Just took my kids to WrestleMania weekend, and I was lucky enough at an ECW reunion show to run into one of my favorites, the Blue Meanie, and I said, I got to have you on my podcast. And he said, absolutely. And then just boom, it happens. And so we're here, and I appreciate you coming on, and you just got married.
Yes, sir. We had a little bit of a surprise wedding, and we didn't tell anybody we were doing it, and they found out when we did it.
Nice. Well, congratulations on that. Congratulations on, you know, I hope you don't take offense to me saying this, but you don't look like the typical pro wrestler, at least especially from the 90s, right? And so what has always impressed me about you is, despite the, I think it's relaxed a little bit now, but in the 90s, I mean, you had to be like 6'5", 265 if you were going to make it. And you were able to make it not looking like that. And what do you think it was about you that appealed to so many?
I think if I did look like a lot of the other wrestlers, I just would have blended in and faded away. I think it was just the fact that I had a different look. And, you know, thankfully, you know, Raven saw something in me. You know, he saw me on an independent show. There was like a series of three shows Raven saw me on, and he got an idea for me to be a part of his faction. And it was because the way I looked, you know, I was, you know, like a Chris Farley type, just, you know, over the top kind of comedic type wrestler, and, you know, trying to find my way. And, Stevie was his, you know, lackey, and he wanted to have, you know, an overweight dude to be his lackey, you know, and, you know, wear the half shirt and Daisy Dukes. And I think if I had been this jacked guy, you know, 6'5", I don't think it would have got me any notice for what, you know, would become my ECW career. And then later on my WWE career.
So how long at that point when you were discovered, had you been wrestling?
I was only in the business a year and a half. This is my 30th year. I started training in March of 94, and I had my first match June of 94 in Wallaceburg, Ontario, Canada. And, you know, not much longer after that, you know, Al gave me the speech of how it was time to go home and learn how to hustle and learn how to get my own bookings. Because at that point I was wrestling a lot, but Al was getting me the bookings, whether it was with Sabu or Dan Severn. And I was doing every Thursday in Indianapolis, Indiana for a guy named Mike Sample. So I was wrestling a lot, but they were kind of just bookings were just given to me by Al. So he said, go home, you know, start hustling on the indies and learn to make your way. And that's what I did. I moved back home. I started showing up at just shows in Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Maryland, West Virginia, and then that led to me getting noticed by ECW.
Yeah, wow. So now that time, I being around the wrestling business, I know that going from training in March to your first match in June, that's even quick. I mean, were you a quick learner when it came to the training?
Well, my first match wasn't anything to write home about. It was just, it sucked. But, you know, just, you know, training, I was starting to have, you know, training, you know, matches in class. And a fellow student who wrestled as the Lumberjack was having a show in his hometown and wanted to have me on the show. And Al said, you know, I was right enough to have, like, you know, a beginner's type match. And thank God I wrestled a guy named Gaza Coleman, who had been wrestling for a while by then. And he led me through a decent match. It, again, nothing to write home about, but it was a start. And then, you know, well, I also benefited that I lived in the school. You know, I moved to Ohio, and I would have, you know, what they would call in football two-a-days, where, you know, there would be a morning session and a night session. And then, you know, I would train for the morning class and then do whatever I had to do during the afternoon. And then he'd come back at 6 or 7 o'clock at night and we'd have an evening class. And I was doing two-a-days 5 days a week for a year. And the only time we didn't do those is like if Al had a booking and we had to go out of town, which I considered a class trip, you know, and, I'd go watch Al work and he would incorporate something into his match that he had taught me during the week to see if I could pick up on it. And, you know, I learned more on car rides than anything. I mean, you could teach anybody to do holds and do moves. It's the whys and the hows, or the hows, the whys and the whens, whatever is what makes a good match. And, I learned more about that than on the car rides with Al, you know, to the event and post event. And, you know, we would just talk about his match and he would, you know, hey, be like, hey, did you see, you know, that thing, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh yeah. And that, you know, and we would just talk. So, you know, I was fortunate to have Al as a trainer, and I, that could have, you know, added to how quick I picked up on things.
Yeah. You know, and also some people I've like I said, I've been around for a long time and I've seen a lot of guys come and go. I owned a wrestling training gym for a while. And I trained with, you know, Johnny Jeter and a guy named Oliver John and different people. And so I've seen a lot of guys come and go. And there's some people who just get it. You know, there's some people who get it and some people who don't. I used to tell people who would open up wrestling schools, I'd be like 1 in 10. I was like, every 10 people walk through the door, one will finish your training, you know, so just don't be upset when half the people are gone day one. And, you know, and then a month later, some people don't have the dues, you know what I mean? and then next thing you know, you got one left. And so it sounds like you were probably one of those guys, though, who you were passionate enough about it and getting it fast enough that, you know, Al would take you under his wing.
Yeah, it was, I was prepared to go just because, you know, I knew I wanted to do it. And I was going to go to another school initially in Florida, the Malenko Brothers School. But just the cost of living down there was more than what I could afford. Because I worked, you know, after I graduated high school, I worked in a casino. And I knew I had to save money for tuition. Half my check would go to the house, and the other half would go towards tuition. And then once I had my tuition knot, I started saving up money for living expenses. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just so I can just concentrate on paying tuition and having something to eat in between classes. And, you know, when I got there, you know, my tuition was already paid. All I had to worry about was training and, you know, learning. And, I think just the fact that, you know, I kind of say I was kind of like Jim Carrey in The Cable Guy, you know, the kid who grew up on wrestling. Like his character was obsessed with television. I was obsessed with wrestling and I watched it every week and, you know, I read all the interviews and dad, I graduated to the dirt sheets where I'm reading shoot interviews and, you know, just reading what, you know, the pros would talk about and say. And it's kind of like an early sneak peek into what I was getting into. And there's an interview with Ted DiBiase where he's like, hey man, you gotta, you know, not everybody's going to make it. You need to have a backup plan and all stuff. And, you know, when I was in high school, I took up a trade just in case, you know, graphic arts, which is something I still benefit from to this day. Cause I'll design my own t-shirts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to go into professional wrestling, you need to just be prepared, you know, just, have your ducks, you know, have all your ducks lined up in a row and be prepared that this is going to be the only thing you're going to have to focus on. And this is the only thing you need to do. And I was willing to do that, you know, working that whole year and just not having much of a social life, you know, between working, saving, and then, you know, preparing myself to go to wrestling school. So when I got there, I was mentally ready. And then when I was there, you know, maybe 2 months into my training, I got a call from my grandmom saying my grandfather was, you know, was dying from cancer. And that lit another fire. And I already wanted to be a professional wrestler, but now I knew I had to do it. Because if I was going to spend this year away from my grandfather while he was, you know, he had asbestosis. Mm. And, I knew if I'm going to be away from him for a year, I can't waste this time. And I knew I had to put all my energy into learning and evolving as a professional wrestler. And then, you know, he had passed while I was, you know, away. And then when I came back home and, you know, the family, my grandparents, you know, helped my mom raise me, and, their dream was to live in Atlantic City, you know, retire there. And when he passed, she was like, you know what, you know, this was our dream. Let's go back to Philly. And as soon as I moved back to Philly, ECW was, you know, the ECW opportunity came up, and it's just about opportunities and timing and instincts. And I don't know what it was, but there's certain things and certain times where I just like, okay, I'm going to do this now. And it just happened to work out, you know?
Let me ask you something about that, because I find this really interesting. I talk to a lot of people who've been very successful. And one of the mm-hmm. things that I find so interesting about what you just said was you just had it in your mind you were going to be a pro wrestler. And it doesn't mm-hmm. strike me as an idea that like you ever really thought you were going to necessarily fail, right? Or at least didn't care, right? So tell me about your mindset going through this. I mean, because I find that so interesting. I find that most people, like there's something about, like I've been talking about this recently a lot. I learned about this thing called the expectation effect. Have you ever heard of that?
No, but go on.
Okay, let me explain. Yeah. So please. There was a study that they did on rats, and they took these rats together and they split them up into two groups. And nothing special about any of the rats, but then they brought these test subjects in and they told half of the people who were doing these certain half of rats, they said, now these rats were specifically designed, bred, and trained to do the maze. They should do the maze faster. And those rats, even though they were completely the same as the other rats, moved through the maze twice as fast as the other rats. Meaning there's something about expectation that affects performance. And somehow it seems to me that you expected to be a pro wrestler, and yet things somehow worked out.
Yeah.
So tell me about your mindset as you're going through all this.
It was an obsession, you know. Yeah. As a kid, especially growing up as a kid, I was a severe asthmatic, and then when I tell my family I want to be a professional wrestler, I may as well said I want to be an astronaut. You know, it just to them, they're like, okay, you're going to be, that's cute. How's that work? Where do you go? And, again, I was obsessed with the business. You know, I watched every week. I went from watching as a fan to kind of picking up on things like timing wise, like calling out the spots, before, you know, calling out the moves, you know, before they did them kind of thing.
Right.
And then, you know, start reading the newsletters and reading interviews and getting into that mindset, you know, and see where, you know, try to understand where, you know, these, you know, people in the business were coming from. So, you know, and then I had to try out the Monster Factory, and then that went well. But, you know, I knew I had to get away from home if I wanted to truly be, you know, if I want to go at this, because I knew as soon as I walked home and I'm covered with bumps and bruises, you know, my family would try to talk me out of it. But mm-hmm. just the mindset was, this is what I'm doing. I'm truly a believer of visualization. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can visualize yourself doing something, it makes it that much easier than when you go to try and do it. I visualize myself as a wrestler every week. You know, so, something as simple as when we lived in Atlantic City and we go visit my family in Philadelphia, we'd, you know, get on the the New Jersey transit bus, and I would pretend I'm going on the road for a wrestling trip. Yeah, just little yeah. things. It's like, okay, I'm going on the road now. Just, it sounds goofy, but just if you can visualize yourself doing it and, you know, believe that you could do it, I believe you can do it. It's just, you know, once you take that initial bump, you're like, ooh, do I want to do this?
Yeah, I remember the first time I was body slammed, and that is not a trampoline.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah, my first tryout was with the Monster Factory, and Headbanger Thrasher put me through my tryout. And I picked up on it, and it hurt. But then, and when I went to train with Alan, I went to take my first set of bumps, and I kept jamming my heels into the mat, and it was, hurt my shins and all. And there's a moment where I just rolled out of the ring, walked into the living quarters, and just sat there and stared at the wall. And thank God Al came in, gave me a few moments, came in, sat next to me. He's like, all right, what's wrong? I was like, I told him. He's like, all right, well, and he talked me through it, and we went in, and I just kept doing it. And thankfully for him, he wasn't one of those guys where, okay, now you got it. Now you got to move on to the next thing. He was just like, you're going to perfect this thing before you go into anything else. But, you're talking about mindset. It was just, this is all I knew. This is all I wanted to do. And I visualized myself doing it. And when I was working in the casinos, and I, already sent in my tuition, to the school, and it got to the point where I was like, all right, I got, what am I doing? I'm stalling. I'm waiting. It's enough stalling. And, me and my mom were walking down to catch the bus to, go to work. And I were standing at a red light. I went, tonight I'm going in. I'm giving my 2 weeks notice. And I'm leaving in 2 weeks. She went, okay. And I went to work that night. I gave my 2 weeks notice. And then the day after WrestleMania 10, I loaded up the car and drove out to Ohio. And it was just the right time,
yeah.
Just the right time for everything.
Tell me now also, while we're on this topic, where I'm at, and I'm sure it's the same out where you're at. There are so many wrestling schools you can go to. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just a ton. And most of them are, a guy who was trained by a guy who was trained by a guy who was trained by a guy who trained at the Heart Dungeon. You know, it was like something like that. Whereas, talk to me about why specifically you chose all the wrestling schools that you're talking about are reputable wrestling schools. Why was it so important for you to find these ones, even if they were in town or out of town, that had names to train?
Well, living in Jersey, the Monster Factory was and still is one of the prominent wrestling schools in the country, in the world. And I tried out there, and out of maybe 10, 12 people, me and like three other guys got called into the office to talk about joining. And it was tempting. It just, he gave us the tuition. I knew I wanted to finish high school. I was like a sophomore at the time. I was like, I'm definitely finishing high school. But it gave me time to think and reflect. And, growing up, severe asthmatic, I was always I always be coerced out of doing things that, be physically, just because, my grandparents worried about me with my asthma. I was like, I gotta do something. I gotta go somewhere. And when I saw the Malenko brothers wrestled the British Bulldogs in All Japan, I was like, oh, dude, these Malenkos are awesome. I want to train there. And I found out they had a school. Start corresponding with a woman named Phyllis Lee. And she was like a den mother to a lot of the wrestlers. Besides me, she helped, X-Pac and Raven. And she helped she helped Dan Severn get into his first UFC. And, we were talking about going to Malenko's. And I, told her, I started, flinching about the price to live down there. And she said, well, there's an alternative. Have you ever heard of Al Snow? And at the time, Al was just, you know, he had been in the business about 11 years at that point, and he was just having this feud with Sabu that was really picking up steam and getting a lot of coverage. I was like, yeah, I heard of him. And she recommended Al as an alternative. And I was like, well, if this woman, you know, just on a reputation alone, you know, is recommending Al Snow, he's got to be the place to be, right? And, you know, that's when I started, you know, going to, you know, start preparing to move to Ohio instead of going to Florida. And in the morning after WrestleMania 10, I made the 13-hour journey from Atlantic City to Lima, and it was one of the biggest risks of my life, but it was the most rewarding risk of my life, yeah. Because Al turned out to be one of the best trainers ever, you know. And yeah.
He's actually been on the podcast, and he's just, you can just tell he's special, you know.
Oh yeah, he was like a big, I still call him my big brother. He is my big brother. And mm-hmm. you know, just look at the litany of people, the list of people he's trained. Mm-hmm. The who's who. And I was, you know, lucky to be one of those early students to train with him. But it's just about feel. I'm making it sound like it was just a matter of, okay, this is what I'm going to do now. But it literally was moments in my life where I was like, okay, this is what I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. And that was it. And I don't know if I would have chose a day earlier or later, things may have gone a different way, you know, with the sliding doors effect, you know. Mm-hmm. But it just happened to, thank God it worked out for me, you know, that way.
Yeah. Now, going backwards, you mentioned your grandparents raised you along with your mom. And I got to tell you, I relate with that. I was so close with my maternal grandparents. They were just like, they were basically extra parents. I would stay the night at their house and do all this stuff. They were always around. Yeah. And so tell me about growing up with your grandparents and your mother. I don't know, was your father around as well? Or
I never knew him. No.
Oh, okay. All right. And so tell me what that was like for you growing up, you know, and how wrestling kind of played into that.
Oh, it just, you know, my mom was a single mom raising me and my sister. And, you know, she was doing all she could. She had, you know, between working, and then she would try to go to dental school to become a dental assistant, and just trying, you know, seeing what, you know, would stick, you know, to help her provide for her kids. And, you know, it was hard because, you know, as a kid, you know, growing up, every 2 weeks, you know, from when I was a baby until maybe sixth or seventh grade, I would spend 2 weeks in the hospital every spring and every fall, you know, with change of seasons. My asthma was allergy induced. So, you know, when the seasons are changing and there's a lot of pollen in the air, you know, I couldn't breathe. And that became sort of like, it became a hardship for my mom to try to work and, you know, take her son to the hospital. And so my grandparents were like, look, and my sister is 8 years older than me. So she was, you know, able to take care of herself a little bit better than I was at the time. So my grandparents were like, look, we'll take care of Brian. And you do what you got to do. And, you know, they moved to Atlantic City, to retire. And I got, you know, they took, guardianship. They got guardianship of me, and we moved to Atlantic City, and they raised me like a kid and their own kid. And I'm very fortunate because while they were supposed to be enjoying retirement, they were helping this, you know, helping me, you know, raise me. They put me through Catholic school. They put clothes on me. They put me through, they put food on my table. And then, you know, when I, you know, the bug bit me for professional wrestling, they supported my wrestling habit of going to shows and, you know, buying the magazines, buying the VHS tapes. And, you know, we bonded, you know, I love my mom. I love my grandparents. I was fortunate to have like three parents, you know, growing up, because you know, growing up, you know, you just, you almost feel that guilt that you feel like you took away from, you know, their lives to, you know, because I was always sick or, you know, stuff like that. And then, you know, growing up asthmatic and, you know, overweight and dealing with that, and you deal with depression and, you know, still, you know, then you deal with bullies and all this other stuff. And, they were always there for me, you know, whether it was, yeah, you know, going to the hospital or, you know, there's times where I had to go to therapy and stuff like that, you know, to deal with depression of, you know, not being able to play in the other kids' reindeer games and stuff like that, and just different things. So, yeah, there's a special bond that, you know, to this day, any chance I get a chance to, you know, sing their praises, you know, my mom and my grandparents, I'll do that, because I don't know where I would be without them. And it was to the point where, you know, I was in ECW and I was wrestling, and I was making money, but I wasn't making that much. You know, thankfully, you know, Bam Bam Bigelow took me aside one day. He's like, "Hey, how much you making?" I told him. He's like, "Go to Paul and ask for this amount." And I did. And I started making a little bit more money. And I was actually able to contribute to the household as a professional wrestler. And I get the call for WWE, and, you know, Bruce Pritchard's like, "All right, be at the building Sunday, 11 a.m. I was like, "All right." And I walked 20 feet in the living room. I told my mom and my grandmom, you know, put all the bills in my name. And they're like, "Why?" I was like, "Well, I'm going to the WWF." And, you know, my grandmom, you know, her knees buckled, and my mom was like, "Oh, yeah, just..." And from that point on, I took over and was able to repay the debt that, you know, they invested in me. Because a lot of wrestlers goes, "Oh, well, I paid my dues." And, you know, we do. But, you know, a lot of times the families, you know, supporting the wrestling habit are the ones who pay the dues as well. And, you know, I remembered what they did for me as a kid. And it was my turn to make sure, you know, my grandmom died 2 years later, and I made sure her last 2 years of her life were the most comfortable 2 years she could have, you know, and took care of my mom, you know. And then, you know, when things got, you know, my mom's health got, you know, worse, my sister helped take care of my mom. But you just got to repay the people who help you, you know, and that's what I tried to do. And thank God professional wrestling gave me that opportunity.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, the things that you said there, it really is important. There are so many people out there that you forget that really help you to achieve these dreams, especially, I mean, wrestling at the beginning. For anyone who hasn't been, anyone listening who aren't wrestling fans, the indie circuit, you are not making money at the beginning. I mean, not even close. And so the fact that there are people around you supporting you, that's just so special. And you mentioned something else I kind of wanted to touch on. You mentioned, you know, bullying, and you mentioned, you know, having to do therapy for depression and all these things. And so talk to me about how that shaped you. And I'm assuming maybe you still deal with that a little bit. How is it that you deal with mental health issues, or have learned to deal with those things?
Well, as I approach 51, be 51 in May, I'm just more comfortable in my skin now, but it took a while, you know. You're growing up and you're always in the hospital, and then you can't do anything without being winded, so kids make fun of you because you can't keep up. And then, you know, because you're not physically active, you know, you put on a little bit of weight, and then you're depressed at everything that's going on. So that leads to depression eating, and then, you know, that leads to more bullying. So, and then there's also the, you know, the issue of, you know, just never knowing my dad and stuff like that. And it piles up, you know. Other kids can be cruel, you know?
Yeah.
And they see something, they latch onto it until, you know, you either fight back or, you know, they get bored with you. But pro wrestling, I thank God for pro wrestling, because I was able to, well, you know, thankfully, you know, I lived in a small town called Gloucester where a lot of this happened. And when my grandparents moved to Atlantic City, brought me there. It was a it was a fresh beginning. You know, I was in new schools with new kids. I got a little bit of, razzing because, you know, when you miss that much school, you get held back. So I was a little bit older than the kids in my class. So you get your, stones busted for that. But, I was able to make new friends and new opportunities and, but, you still have the scar tissue, so to speak. But you just deal with it. And, in grade school, I had therapy. High school, I had therapy. Because, there's the moments when you realize I should be doing this or doing that, I should be graduating this year, but I couldn't graduate this year because I missed too much school because I was always in the hospital kind of stuff. Yeah. And, thankfully my folks were supportive, they saw, how it affected me and just talk and have conversations and, and they were awesome. I could go to my grandparents to talk about literally anything. And they would always give me honest answers and it's just a special bond, with my mom and my grandparents that, I still try to carry, their torch on to this day and, celebrate.
It's cool, to think, man, like, how awesome is it? I mean, I love your story because I can only imagine as someone, look, I'm 6'7" and I was a little heavier, growing up as well. And, and so everybody, at least in those times, 80s and 90s, just everybody was bullied for anything that was different. Right. But how cool is it that you're the guy who was constantly in the hospital for asthma, couldn't do anything athletic, and you're performing in the WWF and like you are a legit professional wrestler, living, made a living as a TV star in ECW, which is like this, it's just an urban legend now of all the stuff that ECW has done. Yeah. And is funneled throughout the whole business and also had multiple stints in the WWE. That's actually a heartwarming and inspirational story.
I always tell people if they made a story of my life, they'd be like, oh, that's too corny. That's too weird. I debuted for ECW in my hometown. I debuted for WWE in my hometown. I had my WrestleMania moment in my hometown and, in front of my friends and family. But it was, like I said, when I said I wanted to be a professional wrestler. They looked at me like, I had, three heads. I might as well just say I wanted to be an astronaut. And just that time of just, the moments where I thought, not being able to go out and play with the other kids, that time alone and sitting in my bedroom and just watching wrestling may have been a blessing in disguise. It's always good to look at something that may have been something detrimental to you and, look at it as a potential asset or a potential blessing in disguise. Like, I'm trying to leave my house and I can't find my car keys. They were just here, blah, blah, blah. And I find my car keys and then I'm going about to perform the test that I need to do. And I pass a car accident, Hey, maybe if I had found my car keys, I would have been in that car accident. Who knows?
Right.
Maybe that time I could have been spent out playing with other kids would have took away from my time to discover and just watch wrestling and fall in love with it and make that my career once grows up. You always got to look at something as something that's perceived as a setback can always be a blessing. And that's how I look at my time with, my asthma and, spending a lot of time alone and, it's just telling a kid to go to a room used to be a punishment. To me, it was kind of a blessing where I just got to be alone and just, I wasn't a bad kid. I wasn't out on the streets, fighting or doing whatever. in my room watching wrestling. I was watching professional wrestling. I was watching stand-up comedy, and I fell in love with rock and roll and Van Halen. So I was watching MTV too all day, you know?
Oh, yeah. You're a big Van Halen fan?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Eddie Van Halen's music got me through a lot of tough times, you know? To me, it was always about Eddie, you know, just and that's another thing, you know, as I was growing up and bonding with wrestlers, you know, and following their careers, you know, MTV with, you know, doing like interviews and all that stuff, you kind of personality profiles, you kind of grow to love a, you know, person, you don't even know, but just through their, how they come through the screen. So, those three, Eddie Van Halen, George Carlin, and professional wrestling got me through the toughest times of my life.
Wow. That's interesting, man. Yeah. I gotta say, similarly, I discovered, I know you're a little bit older than me. I'm 43, but it sounds like Van Halen for you was what Metallica and Guns N' Roses was for me. You know, they just opened me up to a whole different world of things and just kind of spoke to me about some of the stuff I was going through. I had my dad, but up until about 16, 17, he had issues with demons, we'll say, and he recovered. You know, he recovered when I was 17 and he's never looked back, but it was tough times too. And it's interesting how music and wrestling, you know, the story of people who are involved in wrestling tends to be very similar in that, you know, Hulk Hogan was like the guy for me is like the pinnacle of training, saying your prayers, eating your vitamins, believing in yourself, all that stuff. You know, watching that stuff, it just kind of gave me hope for life for some weird reason. And it sounds silly to people who don't know it, who don't understand it.
Yeah.
And so tell me let's move on to ECW. Do you have a moment, an ECW moment that it sticks out to you as like your favorite moment?
Well, before I go on to that, to expand on your other point, to get into professional wrestling, you kind of have to be a misfit, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
You know, just, and that's what ECW was. We were the land of misfit toys, you know, the wrestlers that nobody else wanted. And, or in my case, nobody had discovered yet, you know, ECW mm-hmm. gave me my opportunity, you know, but you have to be eccentric to want to do this. Yeah. I kind of have to be unique. Right. We want to do this. Why else will we put up with half the things we put up with, you know, between travel and the riots and the fights and, you know, adversity at home, because you're never there for the birthday parties. You're never there for the weddings, you know, it's amazing. Like, I'm so battle tested that people laugh at my lack of reaction to certain things two cars could just collide in front of me. And I'm just standing there like, okay, where everybody else is like running around like, oh my God, I've seen so many things and I've been through so many things that I'm not desensitized, but I'm just wired differently to, I watch, I react, I analyze, I absorb before I react to different things, you know, where some people might fly off the handle and, you know, light the world on fire and, you know, burn relationships and, you know, whatever. I watch, I listen, I analyze, and then I, you know, but that's how wrestling, you got to be that way. Yeah, I know we're getting on to ECW, but it's just, you know, I think I fit in because we're all different, but we're all the same, you know, and we all had a common goal. It's just to give the best, give the best performance we could. And, thank God Al Snow trained me, because he taught me early on, you know, mouth closed, eyes open, ears open. And, you know, you go into a locker room and you just sit there, you know, you go into any locker room and you become a creature of habit. You know, you grab a chair and you sit in the same spot every show. And I was a back of the classroom type kid where I had to sit in the back of the classroom and just watch people and just, you know, if I go to a restaurant, I have to have my back against the wall and watch the rest of the restaurant. You know, I like to watch, I like to observe. And that's why I did an ECW. And that's, you know, kind of got what got me through, you know. You know, I blended in. I got along. I didn't screw with people because I didn't want people to screw with me back. And, you know, it led to, you know, a lot of great relationships I still have to this day, you know. You know, a couple of weeks ago, TNA was in town. We stopped by the, I stopped by the building and we all took a, you know, me, Dreamer, Rhino, Louis Dangerously, Lance Storm. We all got together and on Little Guido, we took like a nice photo, you know, this past, this past weekend and for the Legends of Extreme show. Us ECW guys, we all get together and take a group photo because we consider each other family, but and we realize what we did was special, and you know, it's just it was and I knew that, you know, growing up, you know, kind of see things in your life and you're like, I was meant for to be for I was meant to be in professional wrestling because no matter what school I went to or what class I was in, I was always in the rowdiest class. You know, fourth grade, teachers would have to come across the hall and ask my teacher to tell us to pipe down. I was like, you know, I went to work in the casinos. I'm working on the graveyard shift with a bunch of misfits, you know.
Yeah.
All we did was walk around all night and look for poker chips on the floor or see if somebody left a credit in a slot machine, you know. You know, in a wrestling locker room, you say you want wrestlers to come around, just, you know, shake a pill bottle. In the casinos, you just rattle some you rattle change and all the security guards run in like, well, you know. So I look at my time, you know, in grade school and working in casinos with a bunch of misfits. I was like, oh yeah, this is why I fit in ECW. It was just in my, it was my destiny. It was my, my path, you know, that some greater power, whether it's God or aliens, put me on to be with these crazy people and just deal with crazy things. I deal with crazy very well. And, because maybe I am crazy, but you know, and that's, you know, why ECW was, it was what it was. We were just crazy, but we were talented and we were able to connect with, you know, the hardest of the hardest fans to please, which was, you know, the ECW fans were, which were the descendants of, you know, the same people who cheered for the Broad Street Bullies, you know, or Buddy Ball, Buddy Ryan, those type fans, you know, those were the fans, or those were the people who were coming to ECW shows and they work so hard during the week that, you know, they just want to be entertained and come to a show. As long as you put in the effort, they'll be behind you 1,000%. And if it looks like you're slacking or trying to cheat them, they'll let you know because they, you know, their time and money is an investment and they keep the receipts. So, and, and that's what's ECW. My favorite moment in ECW, all of them, you know, you know, I could pick, you know, the night McFoley had me and Stevie come out and help him, you know, leave ECW, go to WWE. I could say the night we came out as Kiss. I could say the night we came out as BWO. I could say, you know, we just had the 27th anniversary of, well, 27 years ago, Barely Legal happened. I could say I was a part of the first, I was part of the semi-main event of ECW's first ever pay-per-view. You know, there's so many moments. And, you know, thank God for fans reminding me of things I forgot I did, you know, because when you're in it, you're going on to the next thing where fans still watch something, they'll rewind it, they'll rewatch it. When you're in the business, you do the thing you just did, and then you're driving to the next thing you're about to do. And I wouldn't trade that for anything, you know. I never made $1 million as a business, and but I got paid royally in experience and friendships, and you know that have afforded me to continue to do stuff in the business. You know, I could have made all my cash up front and burnt out and went away, but here I am, you know, as a worker, able to still go out and do a show, do a convention, make connections with people, you know, at these things that, and we're all like-minded folks. And that's why I think, you know, that's why I love about these things. You get together and I'm enjoying the fruits of my labor, of everything I put my body, my mind and my body through.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, you know, you say that because, yeah, I mean, just think about this. Like I the whole reason I was out that weekend was because I was taking my two sons. I have a son who's in, he's a senior in high school, and then one who's in fifth grade. And we're all, you know, they're wrestling fans because I've been a wrestling fan. Right. And so, so we decided for Christmas, I got them WrestleMania 40 tickets, and I saw that they were doing the ECW reunion Legends of Hardcore show at the ECW arena. And I'm like, bucket list, you know, go to the ECW arena. We're checking that off. And my kids had known of ECW. They knew the Dudleys. I did some, because I own a wrestling ring and have done a bunch of stuff back in 2009 and 10, 11, I was doing some stuff with TNA. And so Bubba Ray was involved. So they've met him and RVD and stuff like that. So they're familiar, but they don't understand ECW. Yeah. And the coolest thing was being in that arena, and the Sandman comes around, and the Sandman, actually my 17-year-old son, is standing there. He's right in front of us. And I could tell that, like, he wanted to pour it into my son's mouth, but like he didn't know, like it was like kind of like, I don't know if he's old enough. And so he just hands him his beer and he goes, "Here you go, kid," and like ticks off. And I just, for me, and it's funny because we're Mormon, right? We don't drink, we don't do any of that. So we were both looking at ourselves like, what are we gonna do if the Sandman tries to pour beer in our mouths, right? And so it was just so funny because, like, for me, seeing that, like, the normal person would be like, that doesn't sound like anything special, right? But like, for me, seeing that moment where the Sandman, we are in the ECW arena, Sandman's entrance, handing that to him, even though we don't drink, like, it's just a special moment, you know? And you guys, there were so many ECW special moments. And I think one of the most interesting moments, I was actually, just so you know, I was in the crowd in Sacramento when you wrestled JBL on SmackDown.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I was there when that happened. So now you've had a couple of stints in the WWE. Was there one that you enjoyed more than the other?
I just enjoyed it all, you know, just, mm-hmm. It's where I wanted to go. It's what I wanted to do. WWE was the bug that bit me as a kid when it was WWF. Mm-hmm. It's all I watched, is all I knew. Of course, you know, did I watch NWA? Absolutely. Did I enjoy NWA? Absolutely. You know, the Crockett's I loved the AWA. I went to AWA shows when they came to Atlantic City. I loved it all, but ultimately I wanted to be in the WWF. I love ECW. I still love ECW. ECW is the reason why anybody knows who I am. Ultimately, you want to go to the WWF, and I'm unapologetic a WWE guy, because that's the bug that bit me and all my memories. And Philly was always a huge WWE town, you know. You know, whether it was, you know, doing the TVs at, you know, in the 70s on 48th and Market Street, you know, every weekend, you know, there'd be wrestling at the Spectrum, where you can go Saturday night and then you can watch the replay Sunday afternoon on Prism, you know, the local cable channel. And, you know, a lot of the wrestlers lived in the area too. So you always hear stories of running into Bulldog Bob Brown, Bauer, or Brown, whoever he was going by at the time. WWE is where you wanted to be. And when I got there, I was just the kid in the candy store, just, you know, happy that it, not astonished, but happy I made it. You know, excited that I made it, you know, A, because now I can, you know, pay back my family, and B, you know, do the thing I always thought I could do, was, you know, perform, you know, on the grandest scale you could possibly perform. And WWE gave me all those opportunities, to the point where they gave me, you know, even this past weekend, I got to work for them, giving tours to their VIP fans of the ECW arena. So, you know, they trusted me with that, you know, responsibility. And whether it's, you know, my first run from 98 to 2000 or when I went back in 2005, I came back in 2014-ish to host ECW Unreleased Volume 3 with Steve Richards and Joey Styles. And then, you know, I keep popping up in different little things. So, you know, whether Edge and Christian, you know, bringing me up on their network show, or, you know, you see BWO shirts in the crowd. But, you know, this past weekend, I got to give a tour of the ECW Arena to their VIP fans, to, you know, the folks that are always, you know, in the front row at the pay-per-views. They entrusted me to do that, and it worked out very well. So any moment I get a chance to work with the WWE is my favorite, because to me they're the wrestling promotion, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, that 2005 run was interesting because it came off of the heels of ECW One Night Stand and kind of a revamp of that. And then, of course, you know, I think I even told you when I met you, I was like, I really wanted to talk to you about the JBL thing, particularly because I was there when you actually wrestled him. Yeah. And he actually, you know, I found it. I was a dirt sheet guy. I read about everything that happened. I saw ECW One Night Stand live. So I saw him take his, you know, take his liberties on you during that brawl. And so tell me really more along the lines, how that came about, because he put you over in the match, right? And so, yeah. So tell me how that came about and kind of how your guys' relationship after that kind of was and is.
I mean, I was just talking to him this morning. So it's just,
oh, were you really?
Yeah. We texted all weekend. Yeah. I'm on the text chain with him and Gerald Briscoe, and we just break Gerald Briscoe's balls. But yeah, it was just, you know, like I said, I've dealt with bullying my whole life, and you know, just being different. And when I went up there in 98 to 2000, I felt that I had been bullied. And when I left WWE when I was released in 2000, you know, I said I enjoyed my time in WWE. I said JBL was a bully. Mm-hmm. And that was that. Mm-hmm. Now, between 2000 and 2005, me saying JBL was a bully, I'm sure it grew legs. You know, like, you ever play that game Telephone or,
oh yeah,
you
know, oh yeah,
or Grapevine, where one person tells another person one thing, and by the time it gets to the person you're talking about, it's totally something different. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a case of that where I said, hey, I think if it was just him here, I think if it was him here and me just say, hey, he was a bully, it would have just probably been like, oh, well, whatever. But I think by the time it got to him through other people's mouths and creative embellishments, mm-hmm. then it became something bigger. So, you know, the first time we see each other is at One Night Stand. And, you know, he took issue with me calling him a bully, and we had our deal. And then after that, you know, the brawl happened, you know, Johnny Ace pulled me aside and asked me. I gave him the cliff notes right there in the gorilla position, and he apologized. And, you know, I go home, and, you know, my face is all, you know, bruised up. And, you know, I saw my mom's reaction to how I looked, and that lit another fire under my ass. And I started writing blogs and talking about it, and I was venting about it. And eventually I get a call from Dreamer. And says, hey, we want to bring you in. Now, a lot of people don't know this, but they were thinking about bringing back the BWO for a short amount of time, just to help as a vehicle for Steve Richards to go from the show Velocity to SmackDown. You know, SmackDown's colors are blue and white. And Nova, who was in the office at the time in talent relations, was pitching the idea. So I think this expedited, you know, this, you know, brawl expedited, but Dreamer calls and says, hey, we want to bring you in, BWO. Initially says this has nothing to do with JBL. And I get to the building in Sacramento, and, you know, they're like, well, you're wrestling Bradshaw tonight. You're wrestling JBL tonight. I'm like, oh, come on, man. And so I'm standing there, And JBL comes up to me and says, "You want to talk?" I was like, "Absolutely." So we're in Sacramento, and we find a room, we find a conference room, and we go in there and, go in there and talk like two men. And, he said we could either fight or we could make money. I was like, "Bro, I didn't say bro. I said, "John, I never wanted to fight in the first place." I was a fan of his, before all this stuff happened, watching, from a distance. Because he reminded me of a Stan Hansen type, and I loved that. And I laid out everything he did, and, he claims he didn't remember, which the Attitude Era was an insane time. I could see where somebody could go crazy in the Attitude Era, be on edge and, but ultimately at the end of the day, the most important thing is he apologized and we shook hands and we turned something that was a shoot and made it into a work. And we went into the ring and we took a real life, the best things in pro wrestling is when you take real life issues and turn them into a work. And we were able to do that. And, to the point where people thought the whole thing was a work at first, they're like, "Oh, that was," no, it was a shoot. But we were able to get, put our differences aside and become friends and make money with it, to the point where, a couple years after that, when the Royal Rumble came into Philly, he pitched me for being a surprise in the Rumble in Philly, because I had just done the ECW DVD that was coming out, and a better avenue to promote, a DVD, I did, and it would be the Rumble in Philly. So, and that's the thing, as we, see all these issues between, Punk and like Jack Perry and stuff like that. And I'm like sitting here going, "Look, I went through something way worse," and I was able to talk and put things aside, just like I think Punk wanted to work things out and they didn't work out. But, me and John were able to work through our issues and put things aside, and we're friends to this day. And, people could say whatever they want, but, I'm comfortable where, in my life now, and me and John talk, a couple times a week. So,
man, well, that's awesome to hear. You know what I mean? That you were able to put that aside, especially when there's all this, you brought up that CM Punk stuff, and it just sounds like, I saw the video or whatever that they put out, and I saw worse than that in a high school locker room. Yeah. You know what I mean? And guys shook hands afterwards. I can't believe that got so blown up. You know what I mean? And just, maybe just because of who we are and how we work, we're just wired differently than most people. But I just look at that and I'm like, like what I think CM Punk says, like, "I just choked him a little bit." And I'm like, "Yeah, all he did. He just put him in a quick chokehold."
Yeah.
It was
a little shove, a little front face lock, and that was it.
Yeah.
And he wanted to make it work. They wanted him to go to Atlanta. He flew to Atlanta to have a meeting to hash things out, and they no showed the meeting. And it's just like, "Oh, come on, man."
Yeah. So,
but I'm just speculating on things I've heard. So I hate when people do that to me. So I've been through something, and we went through something, man. We came through on the other side as friends.
Yeah. Man. Well, listen, we're about out of time. I appreciate you giving me the hour. Let me ask you one more question before we wrap up. And that is, someday down the road, you are going to pass away. And when you do, there's going to be a funeral and someone's going to give you a eulogy. What do you hope someone says, the one thing someone says about you in your eulogy?
That's not for me to decide. It's just, the only thing I control is how I treat people. And hopefully I made a positive impact on their life. I know in my life I haven't been perfect. I know there's times where I was hard to deal with, but that was just me dealing with issues, related to having a rough go as a kid and, between asthma, depression, bullying, and stuff like that, where you know, I did, you know, go to therapy and deal with, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, growing up and just learning how to manifest my depression and turn around and try to turn it into something positive and try to help others and lending somebody else an ear or a shoulder when they're going through something, you know, the best I can. I'm not perfect. I don't wear a lab coat. You know, I don't have a PhD, but I've been through some stuff. I've been through some stuff. So when my day comes, hopefully it's just a big celebration, you know, just friends getting together and just, you know, just the way I want it, you know, my party to be here in Philly with Meanie Mania. I just wanted people to get together, have a good time and reminisce. So when my time comes and, you know, God knows when that's going to be, but I just want people to gather in a room and just reminisce and, you know, just talk about the good times, you know?
Awesome. That's awesome. Well, okay. Let's, where can people find you?
If you would like to follow me on all four social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at Blue Meanie BWO. If you would like to support the Blue Meanie, go to wrestlingtees.com/Blue Meanie. I also have a podcast, Mind of the Meanie, which drops every Monday morning at 6 a.m. wherever you get your favorite podcast. And me and my co-host Adam Bernard talk about everything from music, movies, sports, wrestling, and tons of useless knowledge. And that's, you know, our latest episode debuted just, you know, today. So that's where I'm going. You know, I'm just right now I'm physically and mentally just catching up from WrestleMania week. You know, my body's a little tired and I'm a little bit sick, but you know, I'm just trying to do the best I can to be the best me every day, you know, even when life tries to, you know, say otherwise.
Yeah, it's all we can do, man. And I got to tell you, as someone who has been involved in wrestling and as someone who is a fan, thank you for everything that you have contributed. You are an incredibly creative person and it carries through in everything that you do. And it's just so impressive to finally meet you. I've known of you for a long time, and to meet you in person and then finally have you on my podcast is really special for me. So I appreciate it. Thank you for giving me the time.
Oh, thank you for having me. And I really enjoyed the conversation. And thank you for the opportunity to have this conversation.
Yeah, awesome. So for those of you who've listened, don't forget to subscribe. I'm sure we'll have more wrestlers on down the pipe and all sorts of different things. I have a lot of, you know, different ideas of people who are coming. We'll see who actually agrees and then actually shows up. So subscribe, and we'll catch you next time.